Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
So I'm right about this, and no one will agree with me. I think that's a lot of that going on this week. It's great Danny here on the Fan. Pete in for GP. He's
Hello.
Doing updates. Then he puts a different headset on to do the radio program. It's really impressive.
There you go.
So
talented.
This Melvin Gordon thing that you mentioned,
mm-hmm.
That's going on now. So he's holding out, has been a good soldier, so to speak, in his time with the Chargers. He tried to play hurt, has played through some things, has been a productive player. Dar hit us with this before the show. He's only got 1,000-yard rushing season under his credit. I thought it was more than that once he fell short at 997. But last year played 12 games, has been hurt a bunch. He's holding out and wants a new deal. This all goes to my running back conversation. Grant and I disagree with this about this all the time. My point is you should never make a big investment in a running back. You'll get a nice payoff for a couple years.
Right.
You'll get a Zeke Elliott. You'll get a Todd Gurley. You'll have some whatever Saquon Barkley becomes. Right. It's a nice thing. But let's just do this quick exercise. And this goes to my point about what I'm about to make with the Redskins. Adrian Peterson should get the overwhelming majority of the characters for the Redskins, of the carries.
Agreed.
Darius Geis should be eased in. They're not going to do that. They're going to have some sort of timeshare. Maybe somebody gets hurt. They want Geis to hit the ground running and they'll go. I want Darius Geis to have more than just a couple seasons of effectiveness. A, he's coming off an injury. B, you've already got an older player on the cheap who's willing to take all the bumps and bruises that are going to come with playing for this crappy offense. Let him do it. Ease Geis in. Extend his career. Quick exercise. Tell me on this list of just three seasons elapse. Okay, so 2018 we just had. Here are your 2015 rushing leaders. Adrian Peterson, still doing it, but not the same guy that he was, right? But still pretty effective. Doug Martin. Todd Gurley is a rookie, now with a knee injury, may never be the same. Darren McFadden, Chris Ivory, Latavius Murray, Jonathan Stewart, D'Angelo Williams, Matt Forte, Lamar Miller, Ronnie Hillman, Rashad Jennings, Thomas Rawls, Chris Johnson, Jeremy Hill, and Eddie Lacy.
Do you know what most of them have in common? They're not in the league anymore.
They're not
even
doing
let alone
anything
playing
anymore.
They're not even in the league anymore.
Now look at receivers from the same year. Tell me which one of these is not like the other on this list. Julio Jones, Antonio Brown, DeAndre Hopkins, Brandon Marshall, Odell Beckham, Demaryius Thomas, A.J. Green, Mike Evans, Rob Gronkowski, retired, Jarvis Landry, Brandon Cooks, Emmanuel Sanders, T.Y. Hilton, Greg Olsen, Delanie Walker, Jeremy Maclin, the great one, Amari Cooper. You see my point. Way more of those receivers are still doing it at a high level.
Mm-hmm.
Various ages. We know the controlling sample than that. Now you look at the running backs. It turns over so rapidly. Every Adrian Peterson, who is a freak of nature, his knee gets exploded. He's back 9 months later rushing for 2,000 yards. He is a rarity. Lightning struck, and that gentleman, God gave him a gift. He's used it, and he's great. I'm glad he's here. The rest of these guys, Darren McFadden, you remember? Goodness gracious, DeMarco Murray ran for almost 2,000 yards, basically out of football just a couple years later. Why do you want to use up the bullets for a team that's not going to be any good? So here's my theory about this, okay? Adrian Peterson, because A, he's a freak, B, he's not costing you very much, and C, you've got to protect an asset. I'm treating Dwayne Haskins the same way. I have an asset. I'm going to protect him. What I want to do is let Adrian Peterson take those early downs. Because Jake Gordon's got to establish the run, man. I'm going to establish that run. Fine. First and 10, let him run into a roadblock. What say you?
I know. I understand. And there's nothing wrong with your theory. If you're running a team, there's nothing wrong with your theory. The theory itself is sound. Here's the problem with this particular franchise. This franchise has a bunch of guys that are going to be unemployed if the results are not very good this
mm-hmm.
year. And you have to ask yourself, who gives me the better chance to be a home run hitter? Now, everybody's going to say, well, Adrian Peterson ran, you know, for 150 yards in one sprint against Philadelphia. Yes, he did. But Darius Geis is the kind of guy that could legitimately do that 7 or 8 times during the course of a 16-game schedule with a fair amount of opportunities. If that occurs, you get better results. Everybody stays employed. So now you're dealing with a head coach who all he cares about, Danny, is Philadelphia, game one.
Yeah.
All he cares about then is game two. All he cares about is winning each and every week because he may not have a head coach's salary by season's end if the results are not satisfactory. And because of that, you will end up playing Darius Geis more than you want to because he has the potential to hit the home run every time he touches the football.
Now, no one in the NFL where it's still dinosaurs, it's still old school thinking, trumps data and analytics and the like.
In a lot of cases, yes.
There are certain teams that are, you know, have been ahead of the curve for a long time. See the Patriots. Yes, they have Tom Brady. They also have the most and smartest guys in the business figuring out what to do the best practice every time, all the time. Doesn't always work, but for the most part, they're on board. Philadelphia Eagles. There are other teams that do this very, very well. But nobody views it this way because of what you just mentioned. The shelf life of an NFL coach is so short that they feel like they've got no choice but to maximize every week. It's not Jay Gruden's job to think 2 years down the line because Jay Gruden probably won't have a job 2 years down the line if he thinks that way. There's always a conflict. That's why I have a very firm theory that an NFL GM should never also be the head coach or team president or whatever.
I would completely agree with that.
Because those roles are diametrically opposed and should be. There should be arguments. There should be fights. There should be a head coach saying, this kid you gave me ain't ready. Well, and then the GM saying, he's not now, but he will be. And the coach says, well, that's not my concern.
But only if the head coach utilizes the asset properly. I mean, also, Danny, think about this. A lot of what happens in sports in particular, especially in football, is so random. Who saw Robert Griffin III turning his rookie season into that with the Redskins? Who saw the Philadelphia Eagles all of a sudden going with a backup quarterback and a running back stable that pretty much was a solid list of ho-hums and yawns winning a Super Bowl? So much of this is random and random luck at some case, but sometimes you have to create your own random luck. And by giving Darius Geis the ball probably 5% more of the time than you probably want to in terms of the analytical version of this, you may increase your chances of winning 10 to 15% more just by giving him the ball 5% more.
But then I got my response then, of course, is to what end? Because
we only care about this season.
But Pete,
about this season.
No, of course they do, and that's how they view it. But if this is, pick the team, the Chargers, for example, right? Where am I best served this year? I'm a 12-4 team. I was right there with New England. Okay, I was really good. I had a chance to go. Yeah, run your guy into the ground, right? Do whatever you got to do for this year because you got a window. Does anybody watching the Redskins who has seen them the last, what's it been, 28 years since the Super Bowl, right?
Sure.
So we've seen this group win two playoff games under Dan Snyder's ownership. That's 7-9 each of the last couple seasons. That's been basically 500 the last 4 years, maximized with a bunch of veterans. Does anybody looking at this roster go, Super Bowl windows right now? If that's the case, you play guys every down. But we know that it's not, right?
No, but Danny, from a marketing standpoint, you can't get people to show up if you don't win. So there's pressure to win each and every week.
That's
all
true.
I think we have fewer and fewer teams now that play for longevity and down the road. Everybody plays for this year because we have such freedom of movement of players in free agency. And look, if Darius Geis gets hurt, great. We've got Bryce Love, the next guy in the pipeline. Whether you think that's a great way to think or whether it's a callous way to think, it's the reality.
It's the reality. Of course
it's the reality of what happens. You draft Bryce Love because now he's that future asset that you're talking about. Okay, so we don't necessarily preserve Darius Geis, hurts his knee again, gets hurt again. Okay, we've got Bryce Love coming in next.
Mm-hmm.
We'll utilize him as our
next
asset.
That is a good point that Troy was replacing. You can't replace this next guy. Terrible transition by me, but whatever. I'm excited about it. Corbin Burnson. Roger Dorn from Major League joins the show in about 8 minutes. We'll get back. We'll set it up. We'll talk some Major League, but he will join us in about 8 minutes here. We'll be right back at 11:18. So Roger Dorn has been moved to 11:30. We maybe saw this coming. We're kind of going to plan around it here a little bit, Pete. But Roger Dorn, a.k.a. Corbin Burnson, will join us at 11:30. Got a little double play action after that. Beltway Blitz at high noon. Robots are taking over, but in this case, it might be a good thing. Got that at 12:18 for you. So I was just thinking about this, how much I love Major League. Is that something that's, is that Major League in your wheelhouse?
Love
or is it, you do love
the movie. Every time it's on, I'll stop and watch it. You know, I mean, you've got the the baseball part of it, which grabs, you know, the baseball fan. You've got, you know, the wacky characters that you see in every locker room. You've got the love story on the side, you know, of our man Jake. And when he walks in
with
the,
Lynn,
when he walks into Lynn's house and, you know, they're doing some book reading thing or whatever that is they're doing. And,
yeah. I thought this was her place. Well, yeah. Soon will be, right, love? Yeah. Beer will be fine. Yeah. Stay away from her. Suck my bleep. Oh, it's so good. I love that movie so much.
Great.
What are your Pantheon sports movies? Not necessarily sports comedies, but.
That one in particular, that Bull Durham and Longest Yard, you know, I'm a fan of both Longest Yards, both the previous one and, of course, the newer version that was put out
there. I did not like the newer version. It was bloated, and we're supposed to be just so excited because Chris Rock was there.
Yes, the problem is
with Nelly.
Yeah, I mean, you get the first version. The second version rarely ever looks like the first version. That one didn't. And then, you know, look, I mean, you can say what you want about the Rocky trilogies. You know, number two was pretty bland to me until he actually won the championship. But other than that, I thought the Rocky trilogies, at least 1 through 4, were fantastic. I mean, I could stop and watch those anytime they're on as well.
So this is,
hey woman,
the best movie of them is the first Rocky. That's the best movie. Yes. In other words, that's the that's your Oscar bait. That's your incredible story. That's they morphed into this underdog. Winning more, but the first one's a love story. Ultimately, like it's this, you know, this Palooka that's got nothing. You know, he's love to go over to a pet store. You know, and he finds Adrian or whatever, and it's like just it's this amazing thing. It's not about winning the fight. The others are about winning fights. I will say the most rewatchable is 4, because Rocky ended communism, Pete.
Yes,
Rocky's in the Soviet Union, and they're all standing up. The Politburo's up there, all the generals and all the soldiers, and they're singing that anthem. It's intimidating. And then Rocky's, if I could change.
I love that song,
you
by
could
the way.
Change. The great speech. And Drago picks up the general, yelling at him because it's whatever. That movie's awesome, and I'll watch it every time. And you get Apollo's old trainer in the corner with my favorite little inspirational moment. Where, like, see, he's not a machine. He's a man.
Yep.
I get chills thinking about it every time, you know? And then, like, in Russian, stoically, Ivan Drago's like, he's like a piece of iron. When they make eye contact the whole time. Oh, dude, I get geeked up for that one. Where do movies like Bad News Bears and Slapshot rank for you? Right? Because you're a little
bit older
than me.
I think they're great. You know, the Kelly Leak character in Bad News Bears.
Jack Earl Haley never grew an inch after that, by
no,
the way.
And I mean, I thought that was good. I mean, Walter Matthau was fantastic. Our own version of Engelbert, Jim Mullins here at the station. Jim Mullins looks like he was Engelbert. Look, pull up the Engelbert character.
I know, it's perfect.
He and Jim Mullins could be brothers. Maybe Mullins was the character for Engelbert in Bad News Bears. You know, I thought that was fantastic. I thought that was fantastic entertainment. Slapshot. You know, again, if you go around minor league hockey, Danny, and I had a chance to be in Norfolk for a couple of years with the Hampton Roads Admirals. I mean, you know, you look around. There are characters like that within the game who have, you know, been a part of the game for a long time. They're never really good enough to, you know, to get to or stay at the big league level a long time. And again, there's great entertainment in that movie where they take liberties with it, you know, with the Hanson brothers and stuff. It is pretty funny. It's pretty entertaining during the course of the movie. So if you've never seen those movies, especially if you're a fan of hockey, you know, it's probably a movie that, you know, dial it up and watch it once or twice. You'd probably be very entertained by it.
The late 80s, early 90s sports movie, before they got into the kid stuff, you know, all the Angels in the Outfield or the Little Big League or all the kind of the stupid movies that I think jumped the shark. But the late 80s, early 90s, even into the mid 90s, where you go with like Blue Chips, Tin Cup, Bull Durham, Field of Dreams, White Men Can't Jump. I don't want to call that a genre, but that time period to me is the golden era. Because we're out of the like, you know, I want to tell you about my friend Brian Piccolo. You know, like those old school movies like that. You know, whereas Hoosiers is all inspirational.
But I think
we
also fell, Danny, I think to your point about those movies, is we fell into a era where the actors playing those characters, we hit grand slams in many cases because the characters, the actors that brought those characters to life did such a good job doing it. Because I think that goes as much to anything to making these movies be successful. If we can get, you know, the actors to bring those characters to life properly, then you get into it. Because sometimes bad acting can make for bad character, and that makes a bad movie.
Which is true. But what I mean by the kind of that golden time period is you had a bunch of movies that could be more than just one thing. You think back to Rocky, right? Or The Natural. Natural's not funny. It's a great flick. It's awesome. It's a great story. The book is great. The movie's great. Robert Redford, as handsome as any man has ever been, is amazing in that movie, right? It's perfect. But that's what it is. It's very serious. Hoosier, same kind of deal, right? Yep. It's very serious and whatever. These movies in that genre where you get Bull Durham, which is hilarious, but also has plenty of heart. Same with Major League. Same with, again, some of those other movies.
But that's
that I
good
mentioned.
Filmmaking, though. But that, I think that's the credit. That's the thing. Yes. I mean, you know, some people just say, we're going to make a sports movie. It's going to be about sports, and that's all we're going to do. But great filmmakers make great films, and that's part of the whole combination that makes those movies what they were.
That's the golden era for me. Now, it's not to say there haven't been other great movies. Recently, right around the 2010s until, you know, within the last couple of years, there have been some amazing sports movies made that don't get enough attention, in my opinion. Creed is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the... It gave me all the steamies like some of the original Rocky type stuff did. It wasn't
seeing
just
his character killed off in the Rocky trilogy, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it was amazing. Warrior with Joel Edgerton and Nick Nolte, and Tom Hardy. That movie kicks ass. I passed on it in the theater because it was an MMA thing, and I just was kind of like, I'm sure it's, you know, it's a lot of Rockstar Energy drinks and dudes in Affliction t-shirts talking about tapping out. No, thank you. That movie's amazing. Absolutely amazing. Blew my mind when I saw it. So, so good. So there have been good flicks, but we're just in a different era. You can't get that full panoramic, hilarious, heartfelt, fun, great film anymore. It's got to be almost like one or the other.
See, and I think there's an art to making movies around sports. And I don't think every great director and producer and casting person can do that. I think there is a specific art to making a film like that come to life and establishing different storylines around what sport the movie's about. I think it's a very special skill in terms of filmmaking.
Corbin
Burnson. Sound like Kevin McCarthy.
But I don't mind that. We got geeked out a little theme talk. Corbin Burnson joins us at 11:30. I'm so excited about this. That is next on the Fan.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
There's a red moon rising on the Cuyahoga River, rolling into Cleveland to the lake.
It's Grant and Danny here on the Fan. GP's out all week, so it's just me, Danny Ruye. Beltway Blitz at high noon, but let's jump to the Mattress Warehouse hotline right now. Bring on our special guest, 30th anniversary of Major League, now on Blu-ray and DVD. Please welcome Roger Dorn himself, Mr. Corbin Burnson. Corbin, good morning. Thanks so much for the time, man. Really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So, I'm sorry about this in advance. I'm the exact right age. This is one of my sort of pantheon movies. I've seen Major League a million times. I love it so much. Your character's incredible in it. Do you ever get frustrated that there are jackasses like me who you had such a great career, like L.A. Law and so many other things that you did, but they just want to ask you about Roger Dorn stuff? Do you ever get annoyed at people like me?
No, not really. But, you know, no, I don't. The film, I was on a plane the other day, and you know, you have 1,000 movies to watch. I went through the comedy that's on Major League and thought, well, this guy next to me is okay with it. I'm going to watch Major League, and that's a good movie, man. It's a good movie. I can actually sit back 30 years later because I don't look anything like that guy anymore. And actually take myself out of it and You know, I wouldn't say I saw it. I've seen it a million times, but I've probably seen it 10, 15 times, and it never falls apart.
The Blu-ray and DVD includes some great special features, like a tour of Serrano's locker, commentary by writer-director David S. Ward and producer Chris Chesser. Really, really cool stuff, so I'm definitely picking that up. What was kind of a thing you didn't know going into this? Were you nervous at all about some of the characters, because it's this wide, diverse cast, a whole bunch of different people? Was something you kind of were hesitant about that just ended up working out great when you guys were filming this thing?
No, everything, truthfully, everything worked out. It all happened so fast for me. I was doing another movie, so I didn't even have any build up to it. Evidently, some guy who was playing Dorn no longer was playing Dorn, and they went looking quickly. And I think, you know, the people who worked with me knew that I loved baseball and played baseball, and got on the phone with David Ward and said, I promise you, because everybody else sort of had to try out. He had to see if they could throw a ball. I said, look, I can throw a ball. I'm not going to hit it out of the park. I'm not going to, you know, as long as you look like you're a baseball player, you understand it. And I said, man, I play baseball since, you know, my dad was president of the Little League. So, so the only fear you have is, is stepping in there and you just want to make sure, as much as you're confident, you want to make sure, you know, it's important to look like a ball player. But I got there, I felt pretty comfortable.
Well, and you guys nailed that. And Corbin Burnson is with us here on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline, Grant and Danny in D.C. I mean, you look at some of the other baseball movies, even great ones, like a movie like Bull Durham, for example. Tim Robbins doesn't look terribly natural up there. It doesn't look like a guy that's supposed to be throwing 96, but you kind of forgive it because the rest of the movie's so good. But you guys really nailed that baseball element of things, and some of those interactions really makes the movie sing, I think. You agree?
It was really important to David. Like, David Ward's a big baseball fan. He's a big Indians fan, big Cleveland fan. So he wanted to get it right. And it is important in this movie. You know, it was super important because, you know, on the surface, you could call it a screwball comedy. But it's just going to be really flat if it's just comedy and nobody can play baseball and you're calling it Major League. You get into the minors, Bull Durham, you get into some of these things. They're more dramas that are centered around baseball, if you will. Mm-hmm. They're more personal dramas, even though we had that in ours. Each of our characters had a very definite, you know, character arc. But baseball was so important to it. And especially, you're calling yourself Major League. You know, minor league, nobody really, you know, people not really sure what minor league is. You know, they don't know our guy's great or, you know, but by the time you get to Major League and we have the brand, you know, Major League Baseball is behind us. You got to look right, you know, you got to look right. And I think that it was super important for our film that we did.
Who was your favorite guy to work with or gal to work with on set? You and Tom Berenger have such great chemistry in your scenes, and that the rivalry with you and Charlie Sheen's character, Wild Thing Vaughn, is so perfect. Who did you kind of get along with best on set?
Well, I got along with everybody. I really got along with Tom. I got along with Charlie, Dennis Haysbert. Wesley, cool guy, but didn't allow anybody to get too close to him, sort of acting in his own orb. Some of the other guys, some of the minor league players that actually came to hang with us. We all hung out together. We all had a great time together. And, I just think, you know, there was no one person. We actually didn't, it wasn't like an individual thing. I mean, I was just so happy to be there playing baseball in a big movie, big studio movie written by David, you know, who had written this thing, David Ward, David S. Ward. I was just thrilled to be there. We pretty much hung out together and had a great time together.
Corbin Burnson is with us here on Grant and Danny in D.C., the 30th anniversary of Major League, now available on Blu-ray and DVD with some bunch of extra features. So Corbin's kind enough to give us a few minutes here. What's the best story that you can tell from shooting? Like one of those, you know, whether it was you guys were being misfits, whether it was just fun or funny, a take you guys couldn't get through, something like that. What's the cool story you can tell us?
I'll tell you that it's funny. It's not a... not a funny story necessarily, but we were so bonded and so into what this movie was. And there's a scene that still stands out in my head where we're all in the locker room and Jim Gammon, Lou passed away, wonderful man, comes in to tell us what's up, what he's discovered about Rachel Phelps and wanting to move the team and She doesn't care about any of us. And I remember filming that scene. We're all in there because we're into the movie at this point. And we're all thinking, look, as actors, we're thinking we're playing baseball. I mean, I don't know where, if it was for everybody else, but the line kind of blurred. Like, you felt like a team. And you come in and find out that this woman is using us, and she doesn't think much of any of us. And I remember sort of that scene being, everybody being affected by it, you know, being like, oh, wait a minute. Now, you know, we're not a real team. We're not being relocated to Miami. Yeah. We're not being fired. But somehow everybody was kind of affected because you're playing and you're out there in the field and you got 25,000 people as extras watching you and you're in the uniforms. And then you do the scene inside and it's like, well, okay. Yeah, I think you kind of hit everybody in a strange way. I know it did me, and it's one of my favorite lines in the whole movie. When you know, we hear all this, and Dorn says, "Even me, yeah, even you, Dorn,
even you, Dorn,
or you too, Dorn, or however he says it, yeah, yes, you too, Dorn." I just remember that being, everybody was like silenced, you know, and it was like a deep moment. It was weird, and then everything we filmed after that was like, "Let's go kill it."
It's so funny, Corbin. My favorite, I think the kind of the best part to me is early on where the veterans at spring training, you guys already know each other, and it feels like you and Harris are best buddies, right? And you know, you're already shaking hands with Jake Taylor, and then here come the rookies. It's almost like you guys are really meeting Vaughn for the first time. You're meeting Serrano for the first time. It felt so genuine.
Right.
That Vegematic line with the rookie, the haircut, better watch yourself, Roger. That whole nine yards is so good. Was that early on in filming? Is that kind of so that felt natural?
Oh, yeah,
like you guys really
right
were doing it
beginning.
That way.
That scene is those scenes in that spring training locker room there are the first things that I did. And they were there for a week before me. They started the movie. I came in. There was a guy playing Dorn that I guess got replaced. I don't know who he was or what happened. But I came in late, and that was the first thing where I come in there and I bring in my golf clubs and, you know, he does his hats for bats and Vegematic and all those lines. That was the very first day of filming for me.
That is so awesome. I could talk to you for hours, man. I know you're on a tour. You got a lot of stuff going on. Again, it's the 30th anniversary of Major League, now on Blu-ray and DVD, a bunch of special features, alternate ending with a filmmaker introduction, in-depth look at the main characters. It's the official anniversary was April 7th, 1989. So I really appreciate the time today, Corbin, and all the best luck to you, man.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
There he goes. That is Corbin Burnson, a.k.a. Roger Dorn. I think I handled myself okay. I geeked out a little bit too much. I think I McCarthy'd it somewhat there, Pete. I think I kind of did. This was awesome, right? Yeah, it was pretty good. Hey, but remember this too was awesome? Was awesome?
That was what was great about the movie is it made you feel like that as someone watching the movie. And you heard him. He even said it. You know, when they were doing those locker room scenes, they felt like it was they were a team and there was a true feeling. But that's the part of what makes great actors great and what makes great films great is they get so involved in the character. And I thought it was fantastic. I thought it was fantastic. And he brought out the real feeling that you felt as someone watching the movie, but also that he felt as someone who was making the film at the time.
And so I really appreciate this. Okay. I really appreciate this. And I said this to the Sandlot guys when they came in. And Chad and I have talked about this several times before in various shows and formats and things. There are certain people that are beloved for something. Jim Carrey, Bill Murray, pick whoever you want, right? Big famous guys who don't want to do that thing anymore. I understand that, but don't get mad at us because we love you for it. A guy like Mark Hamill, for example, Star Wars, played Luke Skywalker.
Right.
There was a while where he kind of didn't want to be bothered with Star Wars stuff. He's like, look at my other projects. He you know, it didn't never had as huge media movie success.
They must become offended by you liking his Star Wars character so much.
But he came back around. He softened as he got a little bit older. I mean, he's done some amazing things. Not stupid B movies or C movies like The Giver, which I watched because he was in it. But he was the voice of the Joker on the wildly successful Batman animated series. He's the voice of Chucky now in the new Child's Play, which hasn't done as well. But he's done things beyond just being Luke Skywalker. He's known as just one thing forever. But there was a time when he begrudged it. These guys that are big and famous that begrudge. Jim Carrey is hilarious. One of the funniest people ever to walk on this planet, but he wants to do Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Nubs or whatever, like all the time. Stop doing that. Bill Murray wants to stare out the window at the rain instead of do Ghostbusters 2, or 3, rather. It's frustrating. I love it, and it makes me so happy when I remember I mentioned this to the guys from the Sandlot. I mentioned it to him at the top. He's known for this. He's had an unbelievable career by Hollywood standards, right? It's like playing in pro sports. It's like most guys get one like industrial short or a commercial for 7 seconds, and that's that. Of the millions of people that audition for things, very few work for 40 years as he's worked.
No question.
It's television, movies, bit parts, major parts, starring in things. He's still working. His IMDb page, you got to scroll down a lot to get there. The fact that he's known for this and embraces it, something that I love, that it's got a good spot for him too, makes me so happy, Pete. I cannot tell you how happy I am right now.
It probably makes him residuals every time the movie is played on TV, because we see it over and over again on all the different channels. So, I mean, you know, from that standpoint, look, it's just like with players. If you're great, embrace being great. It's okay. It's okay to be great. It's okay for people to like you. And in this case, if you're Corbin Burnson, it's okay to be known as Roger Dorn, because the movie you made it was fantastic.
I mean, think about the celebrity, the height at that time, and where some of these guys would go on to go, right? Like Bob Uecker's still just calling Brewers games, but household name at that point, right? He's doing Mr. Belvedere, yeah. And it's a dumb slapstick comedy that's not particularly good, but he was amazing in this. Wesley Snipes goes on to be as big a megastar as anybody before, Corbin Burnson alluded to it. Kind of did his own thing at that point. Maybe flashing forward to what his future would be. Rene Russo's had an unbelievable career. Charlie Sheen was at the top of the universe, fell all the way back down. But who had a bigger career than that guy? Amazing. Just thinking about that time capsule. Perfect time in my life for it. One of my favorite movies ever. That was cool. Tip of the cap. I'm not wearing one. I might go get Drab T-shirts cap that he's wearing backwards with a dress shirt today and put it on and tip it to old Tommy for making Randy Duye happy today. Got myself Corbin Burnson on the show. That's a little golf clap for Tommy. That's the Tommy golf clap. Double play. 4 minutes away, LeFan.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
It's our double play. It's what's going on in our lives. Nothing to do with sports. Every day at 11:45. Beltway Blitz at noon. 12:18, the robots are here. They are taking over. This is not a Skynet situation yet. We will tell you all about it. Pete, the reviews are coming in via Twitter. I'm at Funny Danny. Pete's at Pete Madhurst. I went in knowing I was going to Farley this thing, talking about interviewing Corbin Burnson. Okay? I don't think it was full. Do you remember when you were in the Beatles?
Yeah, I do, Chris. Yeah.
It was awesome. It wasn't quite that. I think it was probably 50% or so. Would you guys give me a nod of agreement there, Dar, Tommy? 45-50% Farley? That's how I got it. So,
what's wrong with that?
Well, it's not like it's professional. It's not like I'm sitting here as a trying to be a respected member of the media, so to speak. But I'm not, and I wasn't then just now.
Look, I mean, have fun with it. Don't.
Oh, I had
you
fun.
Don't have to be like, you know, Roger Ebert and just kind of be nerdy about it. I mean, have fun with it. You had fun with it. You enjoyed the project. Thus, it allowed you to have enthusiasm for the interview. The worst interview is doing an interview where you have no enthusiasm for the interview whatsoever, and it just sounds like you're saying back, "Oh, this was a great movie. You're putting out a DVD. Tell us all about it.
Tell us about that."
You know,
you
were able to share that enthusiasm, and because you have enthusiasm, Danny, I think it allowed him to have the enthusiasm. Because remember, he's been sitting in the same room. I did this last year at the Army-Navy game. I sat in a room for 3 hours.
You did
doing
a media tour thing?
Boom, 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 boom. He's been sitting in the same room for 3 hours answering the same questions, some of which you know are good, some of which are bad. And in your case, you're an enthusiastic guy about his project, So I think he appreciates that.
And I almost did Tommy's bit. Tommy in my ear was like, you got to ask him about the solarium. If he had a solarium in his house where his wife, Suzanne, answers the door, Roger's just in the solarium. Get something to drink. Oh, it's so. I almost asked him about it. But it might have been like, what the hell are you talking about, dude? But as I mentioned at the top here, it's our double play going on our lives. Nothing to do with sports. Stranger Things 3, Season 3 in the books. I have watched it. I assume many of you have as well. Spoiler-free review here, y'all. If Season 1, and Peter, you a Stranger Things guy?
No.
You have no file. Just know that it's one of the great achievements.
For folks, I hear nothing but great things everywhere about it.
For folks that are my age, and I would say within 8 years younger and 10, 12, maybe even 15 years older, there's an appropriate nostalgia for the 80s, right? Just there's so many things about it that were so unique and different. You had all these branches spread wide and also different things come off, whether it was the rise of hip hop, hair metal, the Brat Pack, cheesy movies, great movies, everything in between, right? You look at some of the years of film and you go, this was unbelievable. Stranger Things manages to tell its own story each season. There are three seasons now. And each one constantly weaves in seamlessly, not a force. Like, have you ever watched Family Guy? I'm going to ask you
yes,
a question
I
you
have
haven't seen.
Family Guy,
do you know what Family Guy, where it'll just be like, it's like the time I was in Back to the Future, and it just cuts back, and it's, oh, I got to have a plutonium, Marty. Right? And it's a non sequitur. It's throwing in references just to throw them in because they can. They have this vehicle, right? These guys, the Duffer Brothers, who make the show, are able to seamlessly weave in the homage, the reference, whatever you want to call it, right? So in season one, you get things like, you know, E.T., War Games, all the Brat Pack movies, right? Where you could just find all these different things. In this past season, you find Terminator, you find Red Dawn, Never Ending Story, all these things that were happening from when we were kids that are happening in pop culture then, and it's all weaved in perfectly. So season one, I really believe, is one of the great arcs or one of the great seasons of television we've ever seen. It's only 8 episodes, and they're fantastic. A little bit scary, a little bit horror. Good guy wins. It's got, the Firestarter kind of thing, that 80s movie Stephen King flick with Drew Barrymore, where she bleeds out of her nose and can start fires with her mind just by concentrating really hard. It's got everything, right? Season two, I think, was probably, to me, a 9, 9.5. Still excellent.
Wow.
You can't come too close to season one. Season three to me is probably an 8. Still way better than the overwhelming majority of programming that's out there, but it's hard to live up to it. You can't have the same things happen. You've got to have kind of different twists, and the cast had to get bigger. The stakes had to get bigger, so to speak, but it's left with a cliffhanger, and it makes me hope that there's a season 4. I am giddy about it. Did you stick around, Tom? Have you watched it yet?
Yeah, I've watched it.
Dar, you too, right?
I'm like halfway through, yeah.
Okay. Again, no spoilers. There's an after-credit scene, Marvel style, after the final episode, which means we ain't done. Right? That's what it meant to me. Is that what it meant to you, Tommy, that it's not over?
It did. And in a way, that was kind of disappointing.
Really?
Yeah. Because I don't want to give too much away for the people that haven't seen it, but there is kind of a closed door at the end mm-hmm. of the season, where it's not something that continues on. And then for some reason, I didn't even know that there was a after credits little teaser. I just fast forwarded just to make sure. And mm-hmm. then I saw it and I go, well, shucks, we're going to have to watch 8 more episodes of this Coke commercial next year.
Would you agree with my grade though?
I would. It wasn't my most favorite. I would say the first season was the best because we went into it thinking it was going to be something, ended up being something completely different. And it was, in a way, without using something that we overuse, it was kind of mind-blowing mm-hmm. to know that there was something that Netflix could put out that wasn't on TV that was just as good.
And remember, there was no hype around
right,
it.
Right, exactly.
The first one, Pete, the people just discovered this organically. It's actually incredible. Now, they realize that it's their tentpole, and everything's kind of built around it, where it's like the advertisements start, the kids are doing media tours, and on Xfinity, it's like, hey, do you want to watch Stranger Things? You can watch it through our thing, because they know how big of a deal it is. The first one, they were
hyping. It was just people talking about it.
They were hyping other stuff around the same time, and it just came out, and people are going, have you seen this thing? It was the organic kind of guerrilla marketing that you saw from movies like The Matrix, but without even spending money, because Matrix just did this, what is The Matrix? And that was the that was the poster. Everyone's like, what the hell are you talking about?
Yeah.
There was not a dime spent, as far as I could tell, for that first one, and tens of millions of people got in on it just by word of mouth. And then it became this hugely anticipated thing. Season three, well worth your time, very good, but it can't live up to really seasons one and two, in my opinion. But they raised the stakes. There are cliffhangers. They left some things open. And that, I think, to me, makes for a satisfying season of television.
By the way, a tip of the cap to one of our sponsors, my good friends down at Nissan of Lexington Park. Pedro's going on a road trip this weekend. I want to thank my man DJ Deal, Chris Williams, Sean, all the gang down there. Who are going to allow me to have some transportation this weekend, patronizing one of our great sponsors, Nissan of Lexington Park.
There you go. Got a Beltway Blitz coming up for you. I did this to you two straight days where I overtalked and left you no time.
Kenny, it's your show. I'm just a guest.
Still,
I'm just a guest.
Don't just a guest
yourself. I'm just a guest, dude.
Hosting, baby. You're hosting, you're updating, you're doing a lot of different things.
Just a guest.
All right. Beltway Blitz comes up at noon. We got some NBA chatter for you, and I got Craig Hoffman coming on to talk some Redskins. And at 12:18, the robots. Skynet, it is in your nature to destroy yourselves. They're here. Skynet is here in the form of baseball. We'll tell you what's going on. Beltway Blitz next on The Fan. Guys, Danny Ruggier here for Ted Britford. 60th anniversary, the Summer of 60 event. No payments for 60 days. Let me restate that so there's no confusion. This summer at Ted Britford, when you buy a car for them, you do that handshake, and they go, okay, congratulations. You go, okay, how much do I owe you? And they go, nothing. You don't pay them anything for 60 days. Awesome. You can compound that, okay? So you get 60 days of no payments with some of these unbelievable deals that are going on right now, okay? $12,000 off the MSRP Ford F-150. $9,000 off the MSRP 2019 Explorer. $8,500 off the MSRP on a new 2019 Ford Edge. And a quick note about the Edge, if I may. We just got our second Edge from Ted Britt Ford. We had an Edge previously, 2016. It's now 2019, so you know what we got? The 2019 Edge. The wife loves it. We are taking it to the beach tomorrow. I can't wait. It is a wonderful vehicle. You can get $8,500 off that Bad Jackson. It's perfect. It's Goldilocks SUV for us. Some people want bigger. Some people want smaller. That's our size right there, right? Perfectly temperatured soup for us. $8,000 off the MSRP on the 2019 Escape or EcoSport. $7,000 off a Ford. Plus, again, no payments for 60 days and all those things. Go see my guys at Ted Britt Ford. When you do,
this episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.